Today's daf in Masechet Shabbat, brought to you from Yerushalayim, Yer HaKodesh, is daf Nuntet. Okay, we were in the middle of the question of how to understand the difference between a zug sheyesh lo inbal and a zug she'ein lo inbal. Remember that the entire daf, the dafim that we've had until now, have been manifesting a tremendous interrelationship between the inyanim of Shabbos and the inyanim of Tuma. That's because the kli maaseh has to do with Yordim Latuma al Yedei Machshava, and the interrelationship of a human being with the world is defined by his consciousness. The only other place that we find this is by Shabbos, which is entirely a function of awareness, therefore Melechus Machshavas. And because of that, the two are generally deeply intertwined. It's only in cases where we have Gezeiras Derabbanan and so on, where there may be no relationship, as the Gemara will point out later today, which is really fascinating, that we're making a wrong comparison. But we'll get to that. But meanwhile, we were talking about the question of a bell. So we've turned out that that bell really has multiple faces to it, because it can be decorative. And then, of course, it would be purely a question of, is it included in the Torah's definition of kelim when it's only decorative? So we found that it's possible to be decorative from clay midyan, but that was only referring to human decoration and not to animal decoration. And then, of course, it could be a clay maaseh, and that would be if it rings or if it's a musical instrument. So we wanted to know how it would be mekabel tuma if it loses the clapper. So we said, well, I mean, bells don't only work because they have an internal clapper. You will have sets of bells that work because you bang on them with something. So even if this bell was originally designed to be one of those bells that rings when you shake it, you could certainly make it into a bell that rings by hitting it with something. That's good enough. And that was yesterday's approach that we had of, was a little bit of Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Hanina, we said. Rabbi Yochanan today is where we're up to. And Rabbi Yochanan gives us a different explanation, which opens up a very serious problem. Rabbi Yochanan says, this bell, if you turn it upside down, is perfectly shaped to use as a child's cup. It's a small cup, it's good for a toddler, and you fill it up with water, and you give the toddler a drink. What's wrong with that? So, hol v'ro'i l'gamebo mayim l'tinok. Now, of course, what's wrong with that is very evident. What's wrong with it is that this is a totally different type of use. And the question is, there we go. And the question is, can we consider a different type of use, completely unrelated to its original use as a musical instrument, to be considered a non-shviras kli, because it still remains a kli of some kind? Remember, we had the question before about the shofar that was used as a baby bottle, and the question over there is it originally designed with that in mind, and so on. But Rabbi Yochanan seems not to care. Ask the Gemara, are you telling me that Rabbi Yochanan holds that lo boy me'im al acharishona, that in order for it to still retain its status as a kli, it doesn't have to have the original functionality? V'atanya, didn't it say beferish in the Braita, v'chol kli asher yeshev alav hazav? And remember that we were medayik that just the other week in the Kriyat HaTorah. So as Rashi explains over there, does it say asher yashav alav hazav? It says asher yeshev alav hazav. Yeshev means that it is in a permanent position to be used for sitting on. And that if the Zav would sit on something that isn't meant for sitting, you take a bucket, whether the bucket is a sa or the bucket is a chatzi sa, tarkav is 2 plus 1, treva kav, instead of the six kav sa, 3 kav, whatever size bucket you sit on, and the Zav would sit on, you might think it's a kabel tuma of Mishkan v'moshav. Talmud Lomar Asher Yeshev. It also says in the same pasuk Asher Yishkav Alav Hazav. So both for Tumas Mishkav and for Tumas Moshav, the Torah insists on using a case which is referring to an ongoing process, something that will always be done, and that means Yotzazer, which we had this many times. Sheomrim lo amod v'naseh malachtenus. If you try to sit down on the janitor's bucket, he'll come along and say, well, you get your rear end off of that and get up. I got work to do. So that would mean that by definition, that is not mekabel tuma. Now, There are two aspects to this lashon, and this is what's going to be critical in understanding the Gemara. One is that initially, something that is designed for a different purpose, and you want to use to be mekabel tuma as it is not broken, has to fit the characterization of, is this something that people will view as a reasonable use of their kli or not? If it's not something meant for a zav, it's not mekabel midras. Brucey, what happened to your grandmother's memory, for God's sake? Put down the phone. He's probably got us muted also. You can't ask for memorial sessions if you don't pay attention. There ought to be some way for me to electronically give him a jolt in the rear, no? But I guess that would require electrodes to be put down attached to Zoom. I don't know how many people would be willing to go for that. All right. So the question over here is the other meaning. Now, the other meaning goes like this. If you have something that's broken, that was initially used for something, and you're using it for something else, so then this would be a sarcastic comment. Okay, go ahead. Amod v'nasim lachteinu. I dare you. Let me see you use this for what we used to use it for, which is a completely different meaning. This is the way Rashi understands it. There are other Rishonim who sort of bend the meaning a little bit so that at least the two meanings are somewhat related. But the idea over here would be that if you do not have the same purpose that was initially designed for, and people will tell you, well, what does that have to do with what we used to do? Nothing at all. So then that would be another reason for not being able to be mekabel tumas midras, because it no longer does what it was designed for. Now, the other question is this a general insight into the nature of all kelim, or is it specific to tumas midras? Let me give you the background to what the issue would be. The two meanings of the word amod v'nasim malachtenu are very applicable to the case of ezov, because the issue over there is, if this is not something that is meant for ezov to sit down on, so then that's the primary meaning. So get up, we need to use our bucket to wash the floor. Fine. Try to apply that concept when it comes to any other tuma besides midras. It's ridiculous. What are you going to say? That if you have a something in an oil amase, so we're going to tell you, hey, come on, these kalim were only made for dead people. That's ridiculous. I mean, the Torah says anything that was in the oil amase is going to become tummy. Anything that the sheretz touched is going to become tummy. What are you going to say? It's only going to become tummy if it was made for a dead person to get take a drink with. It's only going to become tummy if it's meant for sheretz to lie on. I mean, it's absurd. So it can't possibly mean the initial meaning, the original meaning of amod v'nasim alachteinu. And therefore, the question is, can I use the extended meaning, which means I dare you to use it for what it was originally designed? Also wouldn't apply, because the whole idea of asher yeshev alav azav is ridiculous to try to apply to this case. That's the question of whether we could separate out the two elements that are implied with the words yishkav or yeshev. Now, let's see this machlokas. Okay, so first we've got the braita. Now, there's a machlokas. What does this have to do with Rabbi Yochanan? Aha! The following. Because there's a machlokas between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yochanan about how far we go with amod v'nasim alachteinu. Rabbi Elazar Omer, we only say that b'midrasot, omrim amod v'nasim alachteinu. But you certainly would not say by a tamei mace amod v'nasim alachteinu, because it's silly. Nothing is made for a mace to use. Whereas Rabbi Yochanan says, well, the second meaning of amod v'nasim alachteinu would apply even to a tamei meis. So afo merba tamei meis amod v'nasim alachteinu, which means this is a total reversal of Rabbi Yochanan's shita. Because over here, Rabbi Yochanan is saying, if you take the bell and you turn it upside down, then you can use it to give a drink to a child. No. What does that have to do with the price of eggs in China? It isn't doing what it was meant to do. And somebody could still say, okay, I dare you. Make a sound with that bell. Go ahead. So then it's only going to be usable if you can make a sound with the bell. But that was the first teret. You can bang on the bell, but it has nothing to do with giving a drink to a baby. Says Gemara, you're right. We must have made a mistake. Apel kamaita. We said it over wrong in the beginning when we brought the Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Hanina. It's the exact opposite. Rabbi Yochanan said it's a bell because you can bang on it. And Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Hanina said it's good enough as a kli even if you use it as a baby cup. Then everything would fit. Wait, why are we reversing the first one? Maybe we should reverse the last thing in the machlokes between Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar. We got Rabbi Yochanan backwards. No, because we know from elsewhere what Rabbi Yochanan Shita is. And that is that Rabbi Yochanan all over does demand that a kli function as it was originally designed, at least in some small way, in order to be able to be a kli. Because once again, we have that beautiful Mishnah in Kelim. And we were talking over there in that Mishnah about a metal kind of shoe that is put over the foot of an animal. Not a horseshoe, but something that just goes over. It's literally like a shoe. It's obviously it's a round thing, and you put the feet of the animal in it in order to protect its leg when it's in an area where there are sharp things on the ground. You don't want your animal to be hurt. So we said that over there, it is considered to be tummy. Now, why is it considered to be tummy? Since at the most it would be considered over here a kli specifically for an animal and not for a human. And we said that those are not included. So how come over here it would be considered l'may chazi? Said Rav over there, well, that's because, look, if you're really desperate and you're in a war and you don't have a canteen, you've lost your canteen, the only thing that's available is this cow that happens to be walking by in the field that's got a bunch of mines strung in the field. You take off the shoe from the animal and you use it to fill up with water in a stream, right? So you can drink from it. Rabbi Hanina says, well, you can actually use it to keep oil in, and you put that oil on you to, you know, clean your skin or to feel a little better. Rabbi Yochanan says, I got the best solution. When you're running away from the battle and they're shooting at you, you put that on to get into areas that you wouldn't dare go into because they're all covered with thorns, thistles, and God knows what. And therefore, what? Therefore, the shoe is still a shoe, right? I'm not interested in the kind of usages that you're talking about. We're going to use it as an oil container, as a water container, because that's not what its design was for. So here it's Dafka Rabbi Yochanan who insists that it's only going to be Mekabel Tumah because you're going to be able to do what it was originally designed for. By the way, what's the difference whether it's good for oil or good for water? I mean, well, how do we have two shitas? Who cares? I mean, basically, it's the same idea, right? It doesn't have to do me in Melacha Rishona. No, it makes a big difference. The difference would be, Ike Benayo Demois. I mean, if you've got something that is really disgusting, you've got this shoe that the animal's been wearing, God knows, it's full of who knows what. So according to Rav, it has to be usable for water. You're not going to drink out of it. If Rabbi Yochanan's talking about that it's usable for oil, so oil doesn't matter if it's a little dirty. You're not ingesting it. And but between Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Hanina's pshat would make a very big practical difference. If this shoe is too heavy to use for running with, so then according to Rabbi Yochanan, it wouldn't be Mekabel Tumah at all. Whereas according to the approach that we're talking about oil, like Rabbi Hanina or Rav, would still be considered to be a kli. Okay, the next thing that we had in our Mishnah was, yeah, that's true, right? But it's the same thing with Rav, Moshe. We're just using the latest one, as Rashi points out. Lo be'ir shel zahav. Okay, what exactly is a golden city? Rabba bar Bachanan, Rabbi Yochanan, that's the famous story of Rabbi Akiva who promised his wife that when he's going to be able to and he's going to get back from all of these years of learning and so on, I'm going to give you an ir shel zahav, which refers to Yerushalayim de dahav. It's this like this choker. Rashi learns, others learn it's a crown. Tosis brings from other Gemaras that has a picture of or a symbol of Yerushalayim ir hakodesh, like Rabbi Akiva made for his dear wife. Tana Rabbana, lo tetzei isha be'ir shel zahav, v'im yatztar chayevet chatat, divrei Rabbi Meir. So this is quite shocking. If she went out on Shabbos, it's not considered to be bechlal, a beged, and therefore she's carrying. So says Rabbi Meir. V'chachomim omrim lo tetzei, it's best not to go out because of our gezeira, that she may take it off, show it to a friend, and end up walking arba amos b'rishus harabim. But if she did go out, she would be punter because it's only a derabbanan. Rabbi Eliezer says, what's wrong with going out in the first place? It's completely mutter. So what are the different shitas over here? I mean, obviously, Rabbi Meir Savur, that somehow or other it's not considered to be a standard decoration. And because of that, it's something that you're essentially carrying around to show off with. And therefore, it's not included in being decorative. Decorative has to be part of the format of the way people generally walk. And this is something that is making a big splash up there on your head with a pin. That's not considered to be a normal takshit. Rabbanan Tzavrei, what's the difference? It's there ornamentally, and therefore it's decorative. And so it's considered to be a takshit. The only issue is that the Rabbanan, we're afraid, Dilma Shafa Machfile, she may take it off and show it to other people. And then they're walking down the street. See, my husband loves me so much. Look at this beautiful thing that he bought. And they're sitting and they're walking rather than talking. And meanwhile, she took it, Arba Amos Bershus. So, Rabbi, that's a gezeira, but obviously it's not going to be Mechayev Achatas. Rabbi Eliezer Savar, you're not thinking, man, who can afford a Yerushalayim Shel Zahav? But this thing is fabulously expensive, which basically is the reason that Rabbi Meir says it's not even considered to be a standard type of ornament. So it's got to be somebody like really up there, right? So she's a classy woman. Let me tell you something. She's not one of these nouveau rich. Oh, she's class. Okay. So if she's class, you think she's going to take this thing off? Oh, my God. How declassy can you get? I mean, why should... Oh, looky, looky, you take it off. It's an absolute embarrassment. So therefore, an Isha Chashuva is certainly not going to be taking it off. And since it's made me yuchat for that situation, mandar kala mefik bi'ir shel zahav, only a woman who is very classy, and because of that, isha chashuva lo mishalfo machvia. So something that is made only for classy people is, by definition, mutter to wear on Shabbos. That's amazing. Okay, how about a kalila? So a kalila is a type of crown affair. This one across the, I think it's called a tiara, I think, is that by Bright Barnea? Okay. So Rav Asar v'Shmuel Shoritz. We have a machlokas. Now, let's make sure that we understand what we're talking about over here, because there are two different types of aniskas, of kalilas. We can have a kalila that's made out of a niska. Niska means a actual solid piece of metal. Obviously, it would be hammered down to fit across the forehead. And so if it's made out of hammered silver or gold, so then everybody is made that it's usher, because since it's something that you definitely would want to show off, and it's the kind of thing that you can get in TJ Maxx if you're lucky, so because of that, the woman is chashur that she'll walk around with it on Shabbos showing it to her friend. Ki plige, the machlokas would be da'arukta. You're talking about something that's made out of cloth, and in the cloth you fastened these beautiful, that's like really costume jewelry that we would call arukta. So costume jewelry basically is cheapo material that's studded with, like, you know, things that are semi-valuable. So you put a little stone over here and a piece of gold over there, and that makes it look like it's serious jewelry. So over there, that's the machloka. So Mar Sava Rav holds over here that the aniska is ikar, that basically the only thing you're looking at a custom jewelry is the part that has value, and therefore the woman who's wearing it really, now this is amazing machlokas, gentlemen. I mean, we pointed out that the question of how human beings relate to the world outside of them and how they express themselves, particularly in terms of beged, which, of course, in the original fig leaf version of the beged is very similar to costume jewelry. I mean, the question is, what are we looking at over here when we're dealing with your fig leaf? So this thing is basically a fig leaf, right? Okay. So in your mind, like, what do you see about it? What's chashev about it? Is it the covering that's chashev and you're jazzing up the covering? Or are you really talking about showing something off? And that's what we call costume jewelry, right? There's a tremendous difference between something that is the beged or something that's a costume. So the shiloh over here would be, the machlokas over here between Rav and Shmuel, is what is the person focusing on? So if you are looking at it the way Rav looks at it, you know, like, this is the best that I can do to express myself, you know? So it's like the tattoo of his girlfriend. I mean, it's not really a chashavata, but to me, you know, this is all that I got, so I'm showing off my skin colorings. Over here, I'm showing off my little piece of gold that I was able to put into this piece of cloth. Whereas Shmuel says, come on, man, I mean, Nobody's that low class. So as they're really focusing, those are just decorations for the piece of cloth that you're going to wear. I mean, you'll make a fool of yourself by making a big fuss about a little piece of stone or gold that's in there. And that is not what you're focused on. Because of that, you're not going to take it off the show. And because of that, we don't have a Gezeirah D'Rabbanan on it. Rav Ashi says, no. You're going with Chumrah. The truth is, if it's an Arukta, if it's costume jewelry, nobody holds that you would show it. And the Machlokas Rav and Shmuel here is Dafka on the Anista, because Rav holds that there is a problem of perhaps taking it off. And Rav holds, Shmuel holds, that again, this is similar to, this is Machlokas, whether this is the correct way to learn it, but some of the Rishonim learn it as I'm about to say, that it's the equivalent of an Ir Shel Zahav, and Mandar Kala Mefik Bechalila, only an Isha V'chashuva. And again, as we said before, a classy woman does not take things off in the middle of the street and show it around, because it's not classy at all to do something than that, like that. So, I mean, the question over here, whether it's the same as the Ir Shel Zahav, actually, I mean, the Tosfos holds that according to Shmuel, anybody, even those who argue on the Ir Shel Zahav, are moda that this type of thing is very not a standard kind of thing that you wear. It's the kind of thing that is ordered and is meant to be on special order, and therefore we don't look at it bichlal as a normal piece of jewelry. It's something that is a designer piece, and a designer piece by an Isha Chashuva, everybody, even the Chachomim, would be moda that we do not have, we never make a gezeira on that kind of thing. So now the gezeira are on sets of jewelry types. They're not on specifics. Omerle Rav Shmuel Bar Bar Chana to Rav Yosef, that you told us before you got sick, remember that Rav Yosef had forgotten his learning, so you told us beferish when you were remembered everything that Rav held that a Kalila is allowed. So that means you must have agreed with Rav Ashi, because according to Rav Ashi, you are allowed to wear a Kalila if it's made out of material, it's not made out of metal. Omer le Rav, there were some other things the Rabbanan said to Rav. This is such a sweet story, that a Gavra Rabba Aricha Lenardo, a certain very great man, who is also tall, and he came to Narda, and Matla, this guy was limping, so he had something wrong with his foot. Now you know who we're talking about, right? And he said that you're allowed to wear a Kalila on Shabbos. So Rav said to himself, oh, wait a minute, there's only one person that fits that description, okay? Who is a tall guy, who is a Gavra Rabba, and who limps? That's got to be Levi now. Because as we know the story of Levi, that it was Ach V'Kida Kameda Rebbe, he was trying to show Rebbe how it is that you do Kida. And I mean, he was really good at it, and he had to support his entire weight just on his thumbs. Well, he did all right, but man, did he kill a vertebrae. From that point on, he was unable to walk properly. So in any event, I can tell you, you think Sherlock Holmes is something, huh? Says Rav. Okay, let me tell you what is going on. Shmamina, what's Levi doing in town? Aha. Obviously, Rabbi Afas has died. Obviously, Rabbi Chanina was appointed to be the Rosh Hashiva. Obviously, Levi no longer had a Chavrusa. So now he's coming here in order to be able to learn properly. Says the Gemara, whoa, what? Anything could happen. I understand. Maybe Rabbi Chanina, his Chavrusa was Nifter. Now he didn't have who to learn with and so on and so forth. We're going to ask the questions. And, but as far as Sherlock is concerned, it's clear. Now, in order to get the background on this, we need to know the story. The story is that when Rebbe was on his deathbed, remember, he called in people, he told them exactly what he wants to be done. So Rebbe had said that Rebbe Chanina was supposed to be the Rosh after Rebbe. Rebbe Chanina absolutely refused to take the position because Rav Afis, who was, as far as he was concerned, his equal and was 2 years older than him, and he felt that that was a horrible thing to do to Rav Afis, who's older than him, and he's going to make Rav Afis sit in the Beis HaMedrash when he's the Rosh Hashiva. He couldn't do that. He said, I'm not going to do that. So instead, they appointed Rav Apis as the Rosh Yeshiva. Rabbi Hanina, on the other hand, said, look, I'm not going to go in there and learn by Rav Apis. I mean, he's not my Rebbe, and I don't intend to go in there. So he sat outside during those years that Rav Apis was Rosh Yeshiva. Levi, who was the equal of Rav Hanina, came outside, and he stayed outside in that on the porch, and he learned with Rabbi Hanina, the whole time. And that must have been right now that Rabbi Apis must have died. Rabbi Hanina now, therefore, took the position of being Rosh Yeshiva. And now Levi is not going to go in there to learn by Rabbi Hanina, who's his chavrusa. I mean, all of a sudden I was going to sit there and listen to his chavrusa be doyresh, and he can't sit there and argue with them and so on. He couldn't do that. So he decided to come to here. Asked the Gemara, how did Rav know that? Says Watson. Maybe it was Rabbi Hanina who had died, and now Rav Apis is still alive, and he's still giving drushes, and Levi wasn't going to go into Rav Apis just like he didn't before. And since he doesn't have a chavrusa, lo havile inish lo Levi lo mesiv gabe, and he's come here to Nar Adom. I mean, what are you jumping to conclusions for? Says Sherlock, ridiculous, because im ita the Rabbi Hanina shachiv, if Rabbi Hanina was the one who died, Levi would have been willing to go in and learn by Rav Apis. He only was staying outside for the covet of Rabbi Hanina. Rav Apis was older than he was, and he wouldn't have minded, even though he was just as great as him, he wouldn't have minded making himself a Talmud over there. Therefore, first of all, that means that Rav Apis must have died. Not to mention the fact, Rabbi Hanina could not have died. Guaranteed. What? Yes. Because remember that when Rebbe was dying, he said that Rabbi Hanina is going to be the Rosh Yeshiva. Now, Rabbi Hanina has not been the Rosh Yeshiva yet. There's no such thing as Rebbe saying something and it not happening. Because the Rebbe, he said, Hanina bar Rabbi Chama is going to be the Rosh Yeshiva. And it says in the Pasuk about Tzadikim, Vatigzar Omer Vayokom Loch, you make a plan, Tzadik, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees to it that it happens. This is an Eov. So therefore, Rabbi Hanina could not have died before becoming Rosh Yeshiva. Therefore, my conclusion is the only possible conclusion. Anyway, getting back to what the Strider, who was lame, had said, and that was that a Kalila is Mutter. So when Levi came and he said that, oh my God, there were 24, I mean, these things were expensive, remember, and from the entire city of Narda, there were 24 of these things that were worn that Shabbos. These women are going nuts. They were dying to wear these things. And finally, they got a heter from Levi, and in the entire city, they counted the number of these very expensive kalilas. But Rabbi Bar Avua was in Beverly Hills, in Bechoza, and he gave that drasha, and they got from one single street in Beverly Hills, they had 18 of these things. Imagine how many there were in the whole cities. I mean, these guys were so rich. They were all going nuts to wear this. Zanafki tmani sreklila michada mavoa. That's the difference. Anyway, getting back to the issues over here. It's so adorable, isn't it? Come on, guys. It's absolutely marvelous. Omar Rav Yehuda, Omar Rav Shmuel. Now, Rav Shmuel is a sort of unusual kind. It seems to be a problem. And the gears over here, there are different gear saws. So it's either Omar Rav Yehuda, Omar Rav, as some are Goris, or Omar Rav Yehuda, Omar Rav Sheshes, as others are Goris. I'm talking about in the Rishonim. And Rodeo Drive. Okay, fine. Ike de Amri, we're not talking about horses, Barney. We're talking about women. And Ike de Amri, what they said was that a Kamara, if you're wearing this kind of belt, but now Rashi learns we're talking about a man's belt, which leads to all kinds of issues, as I'll explain in a moment. Tosis learns that we're talking about a woman's belt. So Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, Kamara is Shari. What exactly is the Kamara that we're talking about over here? It's a kind of belt which could be made with the same way that we were talking about that beautiful tiara. It's here also different types of belts that are Kamara. Some say it's talking about a costume belt. So it's made out of a material that's got these little things on. It's got studs of precious metal and precious stones. And the armor of Safra, that is very similar to the atalit muzhevet. But don't people wear a talis that's got the silver things on it and everything, right? So, yeah, or that's got golden decorations on it. That's very common. So that's mutter. So why wouldn't this be mutter? The same way people can wear a talis with the beautiful silver decorations on it. So the same thing is true on a belt. Now, Rashi, and here's where the issue arises. Rashi says, if we're talking about a belt, you will not take off your belt because your pants will fall down. And therefore, we don't have a problem of wearing a belt in Rosh Hashanah, because who's going to take off a belt? Now, this implies that according to Rashi, the Gezerah of Shema Atilach Vuye, and therefore to be Matata Arbamis Bershus Aravim, is true about men. Most of the Rishonim learned that there never was a Gezerah, because men don't take off things to show to people unless they are no longer men, in which case, anyway, we treat modern men like women for their watches in any case. All right, but this is a sugya that we'll be getting into later, so that it would make a big difference what we're learning over here and what the problem is. Others learn that bechlal, something that's an item of clothing. People don't take off their clothing. It's just inappropriate. It doesn't matter that you're not exposing yourself. It would be in the same way that today, it's embarrassing for it. Do you want to adjust your belt and Rosh Hashanah to open up your belt? Your pants are not going to fall off. It's just not polite to do. It's low class. So therefore, when you're talking about an article of clothing, it's bichlal never an issue of maybe you're going to take it off and carry it. And it says Rav Safra, look, I mean, others say it's talking about mamish, like a real, it's a golden decoration. The whole thing is made out of gold. And Rav Safra says, well, I mean, this is done, kings walk around like this, and they have this really very, you know, multi-million-dollar belt over here. It's a sign of authority and so on. And as Rashi says, kol b'nei Yisrael are considered to be b'nei melachim. So if a king can wear it, why can't the simplest Jew wear it? And therefore, it's considered to be a beged. Amalei Ravina L'Ravashi. Look, I understand the issue over here. What would be if you wore one of these things on top of your other belt? So now, it isn't really your belt. It's entirely decorative. I mean, would that be mutter or not? I mean, over there, we don't have the guarantee that Rashi's learning you won't take it off because your pants will fall off. And there's also a deeper question. The deeper question is, those things that are worn ornamentally, which also serve a function of a beged, will they be considered to be the decorative if they don't serve the function of the beged? In other words, is that part of the idea that the decoration is part of the way that you dress, but if you're going to carry it around in a way that's not normal, the fact that it's decorative is lost in the non-standard way that it is no longer functional as a beged? That's the issue. So the question over here would be a kamara on top of a normal belt, on top of a nayana, what would be the din? To which Ravashi says, man, what are you talking about? You're talking about basically wearing two belts, okay? Would you think that it's considered to be mutra Shabbos to put one belt on top of another belt to claim that those are both begotten? They're not both begotten. It's not, you're carrying. You are not wearing it. And because of that, it's not considered to be okay. That's the way most understand his answer. Omer Ravashi, what about a rasuka? A rasuka is basically a very tight-fitting beged. Maybe it's a type of corset of some kind. So it depends how tightly it can be attached. If it's isle mafrechayata, so it's got these tight ties on it, then it's okay because it's not going to fall off. But otherwise, something that is you're trying to hold in an oversized belly with, your belly often wins the war. And out pops the corset with the belly. And then you're going to go around carrying your corset back home. And therefore, unless it really fits very well and tightly, you can't wear that. Velo bekatla, what exactly is the katla? Remember, we had the katla early on when we were talking about it in the explanation of the first Mishnah of the Perek, that this is like this beautiful kind of, essentially it's a bib, you know, but it looks like, others learn that really isn't a bib. It's designed as a piece of jewelry that's a crescent that's worn. So it's something like a bib, because that we call it a catcher of crumbs, manakta pari. We said over there that women will wear it in order to give themselves a double chin so that they should look attractive. God help us, we don't want to look thin like we're half dead. Nobody would want to marry us. And you could go out with nizamim. That's referring to nose rings. There's no problem. You can't go out, I mean, with nizamim, but there's no problem of wearing earrings. Rashi explains the reason there's no problem with earrings is because the whole of the earring was generally covered by a little strap that would go around the hat and so on. So she's not going to take that off in order to get to the earring to be able to unscrew the earring or take it out of her ear. And here we get into the issue of the interrelationship of the dinim, and this, of course, was the Mishnah we had in Kalim about different types of jewelries and different types of rings. And over here it says she cannot go out with a ring that does not have a signet in it. And we said the correct way to understand the Diyuk of the Mishnah is that that's the only kind of ring where the problem is a drabbanan, that maybe she'll take it off. But if she were wearing a signet ring, it would be an issur d'oraisa, because it would not be a norm, and a decorative norm, that is to say, for a woman to consider herself decorated by wearing a ring that has a signet in it, because that's more of a business item than a jewelry item. So therefore, the diak here is that hayesh aleha chotam, she would b'chayav achatas, in which case you're saying it's not considered to be a decoration. It's not a takshit. But is that true? What about our Mishnah in Kalim? The Mishnah in Kalim said, takshitei nashim are tmeim, and remember that we learned from Klei Midyan. And what do we mean by takshitei nashim, says the Mishnah? Well, you could have katlaot, nizamim. So if it would be a choker, it would be an earring, it would be a tabat. And the tabat that we're talking about over here to be mekabel tum, it doesn't matter whether it has a signet in it, it doesn't have a signet in it, it's exactly the same. And nose rings, anyway, it says over here that even a tabat with a chotem is considered to be decorative for women. So how do you explain that now in terms of the psak of our Mishnah that's saying, no, that would be a chiyuv chatas? Why is that? Omer Rebbe Zerich should say, is that a problem? Because we know that there's a big machlokas between Rebbe Nechemia and the Rabbanan about how to understand the relationship of rings to signets. And that revolves around the following question. Remember that in order for a non-metal ring or non-metal cleat to be mekabel tuma, it has to have a beit kibul. Now, a ring that would be made out of, that's the case, remember, that we had all along, coral, almog. Coral is given the din of cleates, which really wouldn't matter because sea creatures anyway have the same din. And the halacha is, therefore, it doesn't have a base kibul, and it was very common to make these beautiful rings out of coral. It should not be mekabel tuma. Now, even if it's got a little space for inserting the signet and gluing the signet in, as Tosef explained earlier, any beit kibul that is meant to be filled up in the end is not considered to be a beit kibul. So if the ring was made out of almog, then it's a pshute kliates and would not be mekabel tuma. So here's what it says in the Brit. He shall matechet v'chotma shel almog. If the ring itself is made out of metal, so then it's pshute kli matechet. And pshute kli matechet are mekabel tuma. So then if the chotemet was made out of wood, that doesn't matter. The ikar ring is defined by the actual ring. And therefore it's tmeya. The other way around is that the ring itself was made out of almog and the chotam was made out of matechet. The ikar ring over here is almog, and therefore it's tar because it doesn't have a base kibul. Anyway, that's the Tanna Kamma. But Rebbe Nechemia argues, or Rebbe Nechemia says, it's actually the other way around, that if it's an almog ring with a metal chotemet, then it's tame because the ikar ring is the chotemet. And Shaya Rebbe Nechemia Omer, always look at what the chotam is made out of in a ring. So that you look at the thing that you want to be doing the work, and the work that you want done is the chotam. Now, if that's the case, that means Aliba to Rebbe Nechemia, he holds that it's not considered to be a takshit. It's considered to be essentially a working device. So according to him, Einochinami, it's not a takshet, and it would be carrying. According to the Rabbanan, then even though it has a chotam in it, the ikir would be the ring, and therefore the Mishnah would be saying that it would be considered to be a takshet. So now it's very simple. Anyway, once we're bringing the machlokas, let's talk about other issues, because we're going to be talking about these other issues in today's Mishnah in Kalim. So, I mean, it does make sense to have the two together, right? So when it comes to an ol, when we're talking about a yoke, which is the next mission that we have in Kalim, actually. So if you're talking about an ol, then decide whether the ol is going to be mekabel tumah. Look at the peg. And what is the peg? What doesn't mean a small peg? It's this long piece. In those days, they didn't have such fancy yokes that were designed to fit around with a curve in it. All that they would do is they would take two pieces of wood, one piece on top, one piece on the bottom, put them over and under the necks of the two animals, and then there were holes that were there on the two sides and in the middle through which they would insert a peg, which they could adjust, and that would hold the animals in place a little bit uncomfortably. So we learned that they used to put a leather collar around the neck in order to prevent pain from the piece of wood. But in any event, what is the peg made out of? If the peg is made out of metal, so then that is the ikker. And because of that, we would have to actually be metami it. If it's made out of wood, then it would be pshute kliyets. If you're talking about a hanger, a kolav, this is the source of the modern Hebrew word kolav. In context over here, it's not a hanger that we would call a hanger for clothes. It's a display. It's a display that's a board that you put in front of your, you see these all the time, in front of a shop. You got this little board. It looks like it's on a painter's I forget what you call that. Shoot, you're muted. You're telling me the word, but you're muted. Easel. Thank you. I love it. Okay, so you have a little easel with this board on it, and then you nail these pegs into the board, and then you hang rings and different things that you're selling, whatever you have to be selling. People walk by and they buy it off your board. So that's called a kolav. So then it depends what the hanging part, the masmerim, the nails, what are they made out of? And if you're talking about a ladder, take a look at the rungs of the ladder. Are they made out of metal or are they made out of wood? If you're talking about a scale, look at the chains that are supporting the things that that hold the weights in. The chachomim say never. It's exactly the opposite. It's always going to go according to that which is the supporting item. The infrastructure is what's important. So the infrastructure of the ring is the ring. The infrastructure of the scale is the pole that holds the two pieces. The infrastructure of the pegs over here is the oil itself, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So according to Rabbanan, it's clear that we hold that a ring depends on the ring, not on the chotem. So that would be the difference in our Mishnah as well.